Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Broadcasting live from an undisclosed location in the universe. Welcome to WithInsightsRadio.com, your source for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. With your hosts, Iggy Garcia, David Tucros. The call number is 646-595-3440. Kick back and relax and enjoy the show.
Welcome to WithInsightsRadio.com. Welcome to David and Iggy's favorite time of the year, fall. What's up, brother?
Hey, not too much. Just mellowing out in my place here and looking forward to getting back on the air. You know, it's been a few weeks since we've been able to get together like this.
That's for sure. We've been kind of busy with our own projects. You have completely shifted your whole lifestyle and everything you're doing. So.
Oh yeah, you know it's what a difference a month or 3 weeks can make. You know, because instead of being where I once was, I'm now where I am now.
Are you?
Yeah. Am I? Yeah. Well, you know.
Awesome.
It's good. You know, it is good because I've kind of taken a next step, you know, kind of turned a page, gone into a new chapter, allowed some things to, you know, change and go their way and being open and welcoming in new things. It's life. You know, that's the way we hopefully should go through life, you know, and not stay stuck in a rut for too long, you know, even ruts, even comfortable ones, you know, that can make us, you know, just numb or lose track of ourselves. We need some challenge, some change, you know, just stir things up sometimes. And I'll tell you where I am now is I'm really enjoying it. You know, I've got my own apartment. I've got my two dogs with me and, you know, I've got a great view out my window. I'm seeing green trees and life's good. You know, life is good. That's the bottom line.
You're not stuck in a rutland anymore.
Yeah. I got out of my namesake. That's right. Yeah. So no, it's good. So, and you've been coaching kids soccer, which you enjoy so much.
Yeah, I've been coaching kids and over at the middle school here in Upper Arlington, Jones Soccer. I've been there for 14 seasons and enjoying it. You know, it's a challenge sometimes. You know, you're dealing with middle schoolers, so they're right at that cusp of coming out of the innocence of being little kids. Not true innocence, but. That understanding, you know, then getting ready to go into high school where they're a little just about to test the waters of what things they can do and not do. And so I think it's a good match for me to be there and to work with kids at that age and level because they're receptive and they're understanding. And I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And they're still willing to kind of push themselves a little bit more, kind of step outside of their where their parents have always kept them protected or guided, you know, and they're able to kind of come into their own a little bit. So it's a real cusp age, like you're saying. It's a real age of discovery, self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that you're there to help them in at least one aspect of that, you know, and help them discover things through soccer that can apply to other parts of their lives as well. It's a mentoring, you know, a real mentoring opportunity for you. So.
Yeah, absolutely. One I don't take lightly. I mean, when it's time to get down to business, I get down to business because I'm not one of those coaches that just goes through the motions and say, we're going to do this and then just do it to do it. No, we do it when, you know, and we'll do it until we get it to as best as we can to perfection. There is no such thing as perfection, but doing it to where it's right, you know, because you can tell it's from my job is sometimes reteaching kids how to do things. Because they have not been taught properly.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And I imagine that there's different coaching styles. I suppose there's coaches who just coach for the game. You know, and if they fall behind, then they get all upset or, you know, then they push the kids extra hard to, you know, in a bad way. But what happens if you find your team falling behind in score?
Who, my team? Well, you know, the only thing that I can do is try to help them along the way. And it's a team effort, so I'm part of the team. And so win or lose, we're going down together or we're winning together. So what happens when we're down? We just have to stick to our game plan. A lot of times the reasons we probably lose are two big reasons. One of the big reasons is the kids on the other team are much better than us. They execute their plays better, or we're not executing or not doing what we should be doing on the field. And then if we do, then, you know, it's adjusting. If we're not adjusting properly. Soccer is all about adjusting and understanding that what they keep giving you, and you keep doing the same. You can't do the same mistakes over and over in soccer and expect to win. That's one of the things about soccer. And, you know, the lack of adjusting and lack of, you know, focus, that's, and I try to keep them on there. And, you know, sometimes it's just not your day. And that's a reality.
Yeah.
That's a true,
you know,
hard fact reality.
Yeah. And as you're saying all this, you know, I'm thinking this can all apply to life too, you know, that you know, you execute, you stick to your game plan, you adjust if it's not working, you know, and you just keep trying to be better all the time, you know, and to move forward, you know, and I think that applies real well with life, and those are good life lessons to learn for the kids to carry forward, you know, that's good.
One of the biggest things I noticed as I coach over the years, I've coached for 20 some years, is kids are when you're coaching kids, they really listen to every word you say. They hang on to the words, and sometimes you have to remind them that sometimes you have to go out there and do just let the game be and play the game. The game will teach you, and that's the big. Because I've had kids say, "Coach, I try what you said and it doesn't work." I said, "Well, then try something else." You know, we'll do something else, something different, you know? I mean, bless their little hearts, you know, they want to please sometimes and they want to win so bad. I mean, I don't care what age it is. I don't care what you tell me. I don't know too many kids that like to be on the winning, I mean, on the losing side of things. Most kids, they achieve. They want to play. They want to succeed. It's the success factor. It's part of our human nature to want to do better and outdo the person on the other side of us. I have nothing against, you know, let's have fun. Fun's cool. But I'll tell you right now, I've coached every level, and every level from peewee soccer all the way up to high school and almost to college level, they all want to put that ball in the net, and they all really want to succeed, and they want to win. I don't care. There's a few kids who are the exception, but I've never met one kid whose purpose was to go on the field and lose.
Right, yeah. That's true. You know, if you're going to be on the field, be in the game, you know, and do your best, find your place, you know. Not everyone's a star. Not everyone's the star scorer, you know, but we're all in some sort of a support role for one another, you know. And,
that's
very true. Yeah, you know, and you shine in your own way, you know. I mean, if you make the assist or you kick the ball over to the, you know, to the other person to score that goal, you're just as much an important part of that goal as the one who kicked the ball in, you know?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a team effort. That's why it's called team. That's why there's 11 guys on the field, not five or six, you know? And, you know, I try to teach kids life lessons from this. You know, I always remind them, hey, how you practice is how you're going to play in the game. So practice hard, you know, pay attention, listen. These are all life skills. I always remind them, you know, one day you guys are going to go get a job. One day you're going to go to college. Some of you are going to own your own business. Some of you are going to do this and do that. And your discipline begins now. You know, how you discipline yourself and how you work and what you're going to do and how you motivate, who motivates you. You know, it's not when I get there, I'll do it. No, it's the preparation. You know, the preparation is we practice and we practice hard and we practice certain plays. We practice certain types of drills. And, you know, that's how life is too. You know, we don't just scoot by. And that's why I would try to teach them that, you know, every moment's important when we're practicing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and things aren't always going to go like you practiced them for. So that's where you have to kind of dig inside yourself and go, okay, so I can't rely on what I learned, but now I can rely on what I know inside myself and what I believe about myself. Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of those big things that a lot of kids don't get taught that. To believe in themselves. You know what? You know, the biggest thing I hear is, I'm sorry. Oh, I made a mistake. Or I hear, this is the big one. Oh. I'm like saying, I try to teach them, say, hey, you know what? You just spent 2 seconds going, and the ball is down the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Stop saying, get back in the game, you know, and try to help your team do the best they can. And these are things
exactly.
they learn.
You gotta let go of it.
Yeah, you got to keep moving on. You know, in life, you know, you can go ah if you want, but I guarantee you move a lot quicker if you get past the ahs real fast.
Mhm. Exactly. Wow. Life lessons from soccer, people. That's what's been
learned. Well, thank you for asking those questions. I appreciate that. That was pretty cool.
Oh no, no. You know, you know, people see one side of you or maybe a couple sides of you, but there's other sides too. You know, and I think it's of all of us. You know, and mm-hmm. what we do day to day, moment to moment. You know, when I'm not doing the shaman thing and out there walking, doing shaman walks or drumming and doing all of those other things. You know, I'm living a life. Go to work. You know. In a job, you know, and so I'm sharing that part of life with a lot of people who, you know, who have to do that too, you know, and we try to, you know, it's a challenge because sometimes you may not like where you're at or you may not like the people or the structure that you're in, but you still have to be your best within that situation, you know, because you do it for you, you know, you want to present the best you so that you can grow as a person. And you know, you may outgrow that job, or you may grow into a different aspect of that job, but if you keep doing what you're doing with mm-hmm. with confidence, with belief in yourself, and with joy, you know, just throw joy in there too, and you will be noticed, and you will be noticed by the universe. You know, I always think to myself, you know, I'm not working for this boss, I'm working for a higher boss, you know, who's always got my back, who always will direct me where I need to be. And even when I'm going through stuff that's a struggle, even when I'm going through things that don't feel good, I know that I've got something. I can take something away from that. You know, I can learn from that. I can grow from that, and it's for my own higher good too. So, you know, I've grown a lot in the last, I'd say, 5 years or so, just by being open to that, by trusting in that and myself, and standing on my feet, and you know, and being an individual in whatever situation I am, being myself.
Yeah, that's, I love the analogies of sports to life. I mean, they really go hand in hand. I know there's people who don't like sports, but you know, your job is like a sport. You know, when you think about it, when you're competing against somebody in the office or you have deadlines to make, it's just like sports. You have a clock, and you have to. At some point, that clock will expire. And that clock will end. Mm-hmm. It's just like a work day. Someday it'll expire. And so, you know,
right.
there's parallels to things, and there's things that cross over. And then, of course, it's completely different as well. But I find that sports is a very good way to, you know, develop character and develop initiative, ability, stamina, and an understanding of things. Like when I coach soccer,
mm-hmm.
it's not I cross-reference sports because a lot of my kids play different sports. Like when they can't, like they're having a hard time adjusting with the ball with their foot. I ask them, "Do you play golf?" And they go, "Oh yeah." "Do you play putt-putt?" "Okay." "Have you ever used a putter before?" "Yeah." "Well, your leg's a putter. The way you turn your foot, the way you position it, it's just like a putter, you know, except it's attached to you. You know, putter's just an extension of your hands and the ability and your heart." And I always tell the kids, the game starts in the head. Everything starts in your mind. The creation, the manifestation of everything begins in your mind, and translates through your body and into your muscles, into your spirit, into your soul. The equipment and everything, the ball, everything is an inanimate object, and it doesn't do anything until you initiate that energy into it. That soccer ball doesn't move until you kick it or until you catch it if you're a goalie, until you throw it in. So the pure dominance of the ball belongs to us. The ball doesn't dominate us. So it's an understanding the kids, I teach them really quick because, you know, then they understand that it's on them to learn. It's on them to get it. Okay, then I have to adjust. I have to learn. I have to practice. I have to do this every day in order to get better.
Exactly. You know, and when you were talking about the ball, I was thinking about how people sometimes let life treat them like that. Like, oh, you know, life is leading me here, or I've got to take this and that. When really you've got the control to direct the life any way you want to. You know, really, it's just, do you believe in yourself enough? Do you have the perception enough to know when to, you know, when to kick the ball or when to catch the ball, or, you know, because the ball is always in motion when it's in play, you know, and so
sure.
you can let the ball control you, or you can become the controller of the ball. And it's the same way with life. You know, you can become you can be controlled by your circumstances and by your own limiting self-beliefs, or you can open your mind up and, you know, and open your heart up and open your spirit up and be, and, you know, say, you know, life is what I make it. Life is what I believe my own self to be. So, yeah, that's
sure.
That's, you're right. There are analogies all over the place and metaphors through sports about life. You know, I wasn't a big sports player when I was a kid, but I've learned a lot from that since then. You know, as an adult, I appreciate and admire, you know, what, like you're saying, you know, what can be learned from on an individual level and the team level and everything too. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it applies to anything. Like my son's in musical theater. He has to practice, you know, 8-hour days to get better at his craft. And no matter what he does, he has to learn lines and practice new dance moves. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. You know, as long as you're enjoying it, that's the big key, as long as you're enjoying it. I mean, the world is full of, you know, limiting beliefs. There's enough people out there to tell you can't do it. There's enough people out there that won't do it. So, you know, there comes a fine line where you have to make a decision, you know, am I doing this for somebody else or am I doing this for myself? You know, that's I think, super important to kind of understand why we do things sometimes in life and not to be pressured into doing things because somebody told you to do it or because you're put into a position where you felt you have to prove yourself, proving and defending. And that's a big thing that happens to adults. We become proving and defending kind of people. You know, we react instead of respond, you know. These are just things that, you know, that no one really taught us as kids. Our parents didn't have the tools. So you can't not say why things aren't the way they are because they are the way they are because we've been taught by little kids. Our parents were little kids in big people suits teaching us. So hopefully we get better as adults to teach our kids, you know, and manifest, you know, better beliefs, better decision making. But in the end, we have to make our own decisions regardless.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So, wow. And that's our show for tonight, people. Thank you very much. And
we're done.
No, it's good though. It is good for us to get together and talk. And I just been a lot of things going on. You know, I feel changes in the world. I just see so much going on. You know, so many. Things around the world are just pointing to people's awakening to the situation, and some of them are waking up and feeling like they have been empowered, and some of them are waking up and finding that they've been disempowered, and so it's been a really amazing time to be alive, and especially as it's growing forward this year, I feel like things are. I don't want to say coming to a head because that's kind of a negative thing, but it is. It's actually coming to a focus, and I don't know what the next few years are going to bring along, but I know that we're all much more involved in our life, whether we're angry about what's going on or whether we're full of joy about waking up to just the beautiful world that's around us. We're coming out of a sleep of sorts, a numbness, you know, and you can tell because the world system is kind of reacting to it too, you know, not knowing exactly how to keep what's been happening all this time going on, you know, how to keep it going forward when so many people are starting to go, hey, you know, we don't like this, you know, hey, we want our voice back, hey, we want our power back, hey, you know, we're seeing what's going on, and it's fascinating, you know. You just can't stop it. You know, I think back to the 60s and when, you know, the hippie movement and the revolution and, you know, people wanted to change things and they were experimenting with different lifestyles and different, you know, ways of living and thinking and speaking. And it was just a very open time and very much a time to challenge everything, the status quo, the structure, challenge the establishment, you know, and it's still there. You know, I mean, we kind of went away for a while, but it's still there. So
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know where our hippies went, though, dude. I don't know where they're at. I don't know why we're so much prayer here. We can't even get out of the situations we're in. What happened to those revolutionaries that we had back in the 60s and 70s? Where'd they all go? Where are those people? Did they just get tired of protesting? I don't know.
Maybe. You know, yeah. I can think of a few of them, you know, Gary Rubin was one of the Chicago Seven, and he ended up being a stockbroker. So, you know.
There you go.
It got a little crazy. You know, I mean, in the early 70s, you know, we had Kent State, you know, and that was kind of a real stopping point for some people going, hey, you know what, I guess, you know, if we're going to be getting killed out there, maybe we should back off a little bit. And some people were real angry about that and wanted to take it violent, you know, and go, we need to start bombing these places and we need to start fighting back with bullets. And, you know, that really turned some people off too. And so I think people just kind of went, okay, well, you know, now what? And then we had the Jesus freaks after that. We had people come along and turn their revolutionary kind of experimentation towards Jesus and presenting him in a different way, you know, and all these other things. And, yeah, and then, of course, you know, evolved into the yuppies and the me generation, and, you know, it was all about getting the lifestyle, you know, you wanted and all these things. So it's been a strange road, but the work is still there to be done. So I think that's
sure.
where we're coming back to now is that, you know, we've got our eyes a little more open. We've gained a little bit more, you know, life experience and finding out what works and what doesn't work. But, you know, there's still that air of change, that's still an air of, you know, we're not happy with the way things are and we want something different. And, you know, it's going to come down to us just finally saying, you know, we're not going to take it anymore and this is the way we want it to be. The people in charge are really supposed to be helping us, so, you know, and speaking our voice. So that's why whenever people start talking about politics and, you know, we hear these politicians saying, blah, 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 I'm going to do this, I want to do that. What they should really be saying is, what do you want me to do? You know, what I want to listen to you. What is the what do the American people need? What do they want? Where, you know, how can we help one another grow, you know, instead of being divisive and saying, well, it's the upper class that's doing it. It's the lower class. It's the, you know, it's the Mexicans that are doing it. We always want to point fingers. We always want to blame, you know, and we always want to judge, you know. And I think that's what's gotten us where we're at. You know, we're a very divided country. You know, we're called the United States, but we're the most disunited country in the world. So we have to pull together. You know, we have to find the common ground again. So anyway, that's my rant for the moment.
Well, that's cool. That's understandable. I mean, I can see that. Someone in the chat room, Find New Hope, said they went to jail. I guess they were talking about the hippies. So.
Oh.
Thank you for your comment there. they're probably still there.
I
find that, you know, in this world that we're creating, that we help co-create, we all are. There are things that are developing that are positive and some things that aren't so positive. And, you know, one of my hugest concerns, though, is how we pool national resources, how we use earth elements, you know, oil, you know, the way we use petroleum and just different things, and then fracking. These things are super, like, bother me, and how we just rape the earth and mining. And then I saw an article about Tesla cars and how they make the batteries and how they dig these big mines to create these batteries. So it's like, oh, wow, this is supposed to be a good thing, but they're like digging up these huge pieces of land to create these big, huge batteries. So it's like contra, you know, where it's not contra, it's counterproductive, you know. And I'm thinking, that doesn't make sense to me. And it's kind of like the person next door who uses the lawnmower with a big extension cord out of their house. I mean, I got nothing against that. I mean, I'm cool for that, but you're still using electricity, which is being produced somewhere else, you know, down in some factory, since coal's being burnt, or it's in a nuclear power plant. So we never truly ever get away from anything, you know. So
that's right.
I'm kind of those people who never. I'm not too one side bandwagon one way or bandwagon the other way, because you know what, I kind of have to look and say, hey, what happens? You know, we drive on these roads regardless. We still do things. And we still use it. I know we try to get our carbon footprint down a little bit, you know, so we don't have such a big. But here's the thing. When we don't have control or we have no say in other countries, then how do we control that footprint? It's very difficult. You know, part of the earth collapses and implodes into itself, It's going to affect us. So not sure. Not sure.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look at the Fukushima or the nuclear reactor over there in Japan that went, you know, critical and has just dumped radiation in the ocean. That's spreading all over. You know, that's going to end up in the Atlantic Ocean one of these days. You know, it's not like we're all connected. You know, it's not like you can hide anywhere from you know, the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. I have been watching some interesting shows, though, on television about people who have decided to basically just leave everything behind and go out into the wilderness and create a life there that is very, very primitive, very, very going back to the hunter-gatherer kind of a lifestyle, and keeping a minimum of things that they might need from our world, the modern world. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's a choice people are making to return to very, very basic things, you know, to give up all of these luxuries that we think we need.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think there's a breaking point with anything in any type of society, any type of work. There comes a point, you know, you could be spiritual, you could be, you know, you could be Christian, you can be whatever. There is a breaking point for everything because we're all on this planet regardless, you know, and there's no, mm-hmm. I'm going to look the other way because, you know, I think it's more of a guilty thing if you do look away and you know that you could do something about it. You know, I think that's something that a lot of us tend to do sometimes. Oh, we can't make a difference because, you know what, the system's too big. You know, all systems are designed to fail to begin with. They're all designed to collapse and fall and implode upon themselves. And so it's just a matter of time and when and how and, you know, who's going to initiate it. I think a lot of people like to talk big stories, like to talk big things, and, you know, they don't want to initiate.
That's right.
You know, I mean, sometimes it's not the best idea to initiate because you might end up dead. But you know what? That's part of being in congruence and understanding and want to make change. That, you know what? You might have to be sacrificed in the process in order to bring out better leaders and better, you know, things to happen and things to evolve. But I think a lot of us want to be able to be proactive in things and be an activist without being damaged or hurt. I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, nothing happened to us, but we just want to voice our opinion but not have to really, you know, show our face about it. That's what
right.
I find.
Yeah.
When we're around people.
Yeah, you're right, you know, and it's kind of the age of that. We're very, although we have all this technology and we're connected in a lot of ways, we're very disconnected too. We step back from things and we become observers, you know, and we watch the news instead of going out there and trying to change what's happening. We want to retreat into our little technosphere of, you know, safety where, you know, my walls are my fortress and there's nothing outside of that that I really care about or want to know about, you know, but you can't live like that, you know, especially as we are growing, you know, there's more people on the world, you know, and it's putting pressures on governments to expand, you know, and to, we're going to need to manage that somehow, you know, and in a positive way, to stop the cycle of violence and overthrow and rising and falling of civilizations that's been going on for so long. We need to address this in a different way, you know, and look at the problem in a different way and say that, you know, hey, you know what, that person over there in Africa is just a mirror of me. You know, I could be living that life just as easily as he could be living mine, you know, and so, you know, we're all connected that way. And but we, as I say, you know, we seem to be becoming more and more divided too, you know, and we've got to somehow turn that around or see through that, you know, that it's just a illusion or a game that sometimes is played on us to keep us from becoming united, you know. As long as we can keep fighting each other and seeing each other as the enemy, then we will not be a threat to anyone who wants to keep things the way they are.
Yeah, and I agree with you. There are people who, they jump into little cliques and factions, and they kind of stay in their little corners and their little groups. And that's how we stay divided, you know. I don't expect everybody to agree on everything 100%, but there's got to be, you know, a point where, you know, it's the golden rule and understanding and saying, hey, you know what, I won't hurt somebody because of this or that. And, you know, we're just seeing it all over the world. People are starving. People are hungry. People want change. And these powers to be just don't want to let go. And then, you know, the people will revolt, and they've revolted. And that's what you're seeing all over the world. Now you see a big influx of refugees all over the world, people, you know, leaving their homelands because it's not safe anymore. I was so saddened when I saw that video where someone sent me a video about these refugees whose boat sank, and people mm-hmm. who were combing the beach found a little toddler who had drowned.
Oh.
He'd washed up. And, you know, I saw that, and I was just like, wow. I mean, you know, it's really sad that we can't get along as a species. Not just even just being human. You know, we can't even get along with being human. That we have to create such division with belief systems and understanding, you know, in religions that, you know, that God would create all these different, you know, systems to say this person's religion is more and better than this person's religion. This person's God is better than this God. And you know what? Who ends up losing are the people who are actually believe in the gods and believe in the system. And then, you know, these refugees, they try to escape. And they're the ones that pay. They're the ones that die. They're the ones that get displaced. They can't go home to these lands. But this is nothing new. This is nothing that we're talking about is nothing new. This has been going on for centuries. Centuries. Now the system is more huge and much bigger because of technology and because we have more people on the planet. And now we play wars, Nintendo wars, versus, you know, actually having troops on the ground. It's just really right. sad.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I don't know how it's going to come about, you know, or what it's going to look like, you know, as we go through this change. You know, I've often thought to myself, you know, I just have a feeling that the people 200 or 300 years from now are going to be a lot humbler, a lot more appreciative of one another and what they got, because in between that time, I would think we're going to have some kind of a collapse, and it's going to hit all of us, and we're all going to have to face it. No matter where you are, I don't care if you're the richest person in the world, you know, if your money goes, you know, and one day you're worth nothing, you know, you're going to be out there in the streets trying to get a loaf of bread just like everybody else. So you just have to, you know, we have to start now, really, with learning to love one another, learning to hear one another, learning to accept one another, but beyond all these superficial differences like color of your skin or what you believe in. I'm not saying it's not important, you know, and you shouldn't be proud of your culture or proud of who you are, which, you know, your traditions and all that. But I'm saying that underneath all that, there's just a commonality of being human, you know, and we need to be human sure. to one another, you know, and we need to manage the world. Like you're saying, this, we do not manage the world. We rape it. You know, we use it like it's never going to run out, like it's ours for the taking, and it's not. You know, one of the best lines I've heard from a movie lately was that movie with Keanu Reeves, that The Day the Earth Stood Still, and he's talking to the defense secretary, Kathy Bates, and she says, well, you came to our planet, you know, and he says, your planet? She says, yeah, this is our planet. He says, no, it's not. You know, and when you think about that, it's not our planet. You know, we don't own it. You know, we live on it. We share it, but we don't own it. It doesn't belong to us, you know. We think we have the right to just go and take everything without any consequence, you know, without any, because somehow we're the masters of this world, but we're not. We are supposed to be the partners with this world. We're supposed to be caretakers, you know. When we look at all the beauty that's around us, you know, and yet, you know, we have these huge garbage dumps. We have these huge strip mines. We have these clear cuttings of forests, and we have, you know, just our whole attitude is to treat the world like, you know, it's like we're a virus or a predator, a parasite, you know, and that's no way for us to act, not if we're going to be the most intelligent and responsible species on the planet.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know the Nemenha that we're both part of, we have a fivefold mission: healing the individuals, healing the families, healing communities, healing society. And by doing that, in the end, we heal the planet. You know,
we do,
you know, by healing ourselves and working and understanding and then healing family. Family doesn't have to be blood family. It could be people. We're all blood. I mean, no matter, I'll take that back. We're all blood. We're all family. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all on this planet, black, white, yellow, red. I don't care what color you are. We're all family. So, I mean, family doesn't always get along. But I'll tell you right now, when this earth collapses upon itself and when it's done, we're done. We become a new existence. We
right.
become something new. We become a new energy. We become whatever happens. Whatever we become, we move on. But, you know, that's important to try to help heal individuals. because that's something that, you know, is super important, you know, helping people heal themselves, self-healing. All healing is self-healing. So it's very important we teach that. And that's something that I know you and I have been trying to do through our work, through drumming, through shamanism, through our readings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and of course, we heal our own families. We create new families. We create new families. We have friends, pods all over the place coming together. You know, we have a little pod that we run around with, and other people have little pods, you know. So, but that's what we've been doing, working together. And in turn, we all come together in community. We come together through drum circles. We come together with these huge events. We come together, Ash Cave, the Thousand Drummers, Garcia, and all kinds of different things, the hikes, the things we do. And then hopefully that spews over into society, and then society sees, you know what, they look like they're having fun. They look like they're having a good thing, you know. And in the end, eventually, I don't want to call it an agenda, but our beliefs and our core systems start to, you know, manifest themselves through people, and they start to see, you know, there is a different way to live. There is a different way to enjoy things. We don't have to always consume and use. And in the end, you know, we help ourselves because we help the planet. And the planet, we need her. As much as we may not think about her on a regular basis, we do need her in order for our survival.
Oh, definitely. That's right. That's right. You know, without her, we'd be just floating in space. You know, and we wouldn't last very long. And, you know, this is our home. This is our mother. This is our living thing that breathes and moves and you know, cries out and comforts us and, you know, speaks to us through the wind, through the trees, through the stars, through the animals, through each other, you know, through just being here. It is a communication going on. So, you know, that communication, you know, when you have to really try not to hear it because it's all around us and it speaks to our hearts. So,
absolutely.
You know, we need to soften our hearts a little bit more, you know, and we need to get out and open our ears, open our minds, open our eyes, and be receptive to what she's saying. She is amazing, you know, and you've experienced just a sliver of her consciousness, you know, and it was overwhelming, you know. There's so much going on, so all over the world at once, you know, and she's huge, and she will, you know, she will go on without us, but we're here for a reason and a purpose and to partner. So while we're here, you know, we could last 100,000 years or we could be gone in 1,000 or less. It's really that part is up to us, you know, and how we behave here. But we're here for partnership. You know, we didn't evolve just to be monkeys in suits. You know, we evolved our intelligence. We evolved our imaginations. We evolved our spiritual natures to become co-creators, guardians, whatever you want to call it, partners with this earth spirit, with our mother. And so, you know, I think that we're starting to wake up to that. You know, it's been prophesied for a long time, but we're starting to actually live in this world where, you know, what we see matters. What we see matters to us. And, you know, and we see the good, we see the bad, but we see it. You know, we get blind to it anymore, deflected by it. At least I like to think, you know, the majority of us are the ones who are involved in trying to engage the world are like that. You know, there's a lot of sleeping people out there still, and they're in their own world. You know, if I went into somewhere, even in our own city here, and walked down the street, I'd be in their world. You know, they wouldn't have the same perceptions that I would. They wouldn't have the same mindset that I would. Their world is different. You know, they've been raised different. They've been brought up differently. Their hearts and minds are in their own places. So, you know, I can't speak for everybody, of course, you know, but I do know that we need to just be together and make that okay. You know, you don't have to like everybody, and some people will, you know, be attracted to people, and some people will be repelled by people. But you know, you just let them be. You know, everyone's got a right to be and to be themselves.
Yes. Let's take a real quick break and we'll be right back.
Yes.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network, your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com, your free online resource for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. With Insights Radio is a listener-supported radio station, and your donations are greatly appreciated.
We cover a variety of topics, interviews surrounding the metaphysical and holistic and natural medicine, alternative healing modalities, and much more. Thank you for tuning in to WithInsightsRadio.com.
Welcome back to With Insights Radio. You're listening to David and Iggy live here on an undisclosed location in the universe. We are broadcasting live, and we hope you're enjoying our topic. And we're just kind of, this is a forum. We talk a little bit. If you want to chime in and talk with us and share your thoughts a little bit, the number is 646-595-3440. Again, that's 646-595-3440. And we are back.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And, you know, I don't want to just always talk about, you know, these deep physical or metaphysical things. You know, it's we have fun, too, you know, and life is fun. And we had fun this weekend, actually, when we got together. It's been a while since we got together, the four of us, our little pod, as you say, you know, and so we got together and went on a little creek walk. We went to High Banks Park and started going on this trail called Dripping Rock Trail. And but before we got very far, we found a little side trail, which is like us to do. We went down the side trail instead of following the main trail and ended up at the creek. And this creek is very, very interesting. It's made up of a lot of layers of shale that have been, you know, carved away by the water over the eons. And in this shale, too, it also has brought down these concretions. These concretions are basically stone balls, you could say, big round stone made mostly of iron. They're just fascinating. They are fascinating. I mean, and some of them are cracked open. Some of them, they just look like they were sculptures of some kind or leftovers from some civilization. And as we're walking along there, you could feel, you know, like people had been here for thousands of years and their spirits were with us as we walked the creek. And what a great time, you know, it was to discover nature and to connect again with one another. And that was just a very special time, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I totally enjoyed it. We went for a little hike, like you said, and then we also, which I didn't know, our friend Adriana brought some instruments, and we actually performed a little bit. We did a little recording down by the creek side, and we were on top of these two little shapes where those balls that you were talking about, those iron balls. A couple of them looked like turtles when we were sitting on top of them. And we just started playing instruments and just kind of messing around. And then we'd record for a couple, 3 or 4 minutes, and then we'd change instruments and do it again. It was a lot of fun. I totally enjoyed that. So I want to thank Adriana for that. And I want to thank Mary, too, for hanging out with us. They're usually on our show with us
definitely.
And talking. So hopefully they're tuning in. I want to say hi to Mark. He's there online listening through the chat room. So I want to thank him as well. And we had breakfast with him earlier that morning with his girlfriend.
That's
so we have
right.
cool yeah.
group. You know, we do, and we get along. And I think the work happens there. Like you say, it happens individually inside of us. You know, we become individuals that are growing, evolving. And then we have groups of people that we resonate with, that we gather together with, that we do our work and our play with, you know, and then that group, you know, we move out and we become like influences in other groups and people, like we were playing your instruments and people come along and they're just attracted to it. They want to see and hear more. So they stand there and they get a little bit of it and they move on and who knows what seeds were planted with them, you know, that they saw these people down there playing these instruments and maybe they just got a smile out of it and that's enough, you know. Maybe it put a spark in their brain of like, you know, hey, you know, maybe one day I could do that, you know, or it would be kind of cool to form a group like that or to find something on my own that I will want to do, step out of my own, you know, what I think is my rut, you know, and step into something different. Kind of the same thing that happens when we go play at Ash Cave, you know, when the people come by, they think they're just visiting the cave and they end up in the middle of a huge celebration, ceremony, drumming, dancing, hooping, you know, life. And it's wonderful to be a part of that. And that's how it happens. You know, I don't think it's going to be any huge dramatic one event that's going to change the world. It's a series of little events. It's a series of each of us taking those steps and growing and challenging ourselves to step out of our comfort zones a little bit and to step into the spotlight, into other people's areas of awareness, you know. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the world is changed by wallflowers. You got to get out there and you got to get in the game, like we're talking about earlier, you know, and be a player or be a supporter, you know, be a cheer us on.
Yeah.
No one's more important than the other. You know, we all need love and support and to know that we're doing the right thing, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, like you said, it takes little changes to make big changes, and I agree with that. I think that's sometimes that's why people maybe do things for a little bit and then all of a sudden they drop out because they don't see the big effect. The big effect doesn't necessarily take place right in front of you. It probably takes effect outside of you. You know, like I said, no man or woman is a prophet in their hometown. Sometimes maybe we may be prophesizing here and doing whatever we do, and then all of a sudden we see change outside. You know, we see something happening over there in another city or another town or another country. I know there's a lot of things that we've done here that don't take off here, but people take our ideas and they implement them someplace else and they just work, you know? So that's pretty cool too. So I get excited about seeing things like that. That makes me really happy.
You know what I get excited about too is when I see pictures from our friend over there in Serbia, Lilijan, I think her name is. But I see what they're doing over there and it's like, wow, you know, they have a lot going on that you wouldn't think, you know, with Native American spirituality or indigenous spirituality over there. And there's a whole like movement over there that is beautiful, you know, and I love just seeing her pictures and her energy and having her share what she shares over there. And I feel like, you know, that even though they're halfway across the world, you know, we are so connected, like we're right by side doing the same work, you know? And it's like that. It's like that when you open up to other places, other people, and you begin to feel like, you know, oh, I'm just doing this and nobody's really paying attention, when actually you're part of a very important movement. You're part of a very important process. And,
absolutely.
You know, even though you don't see the results and the people around you don't really appreciate what you're doing, just keep doing it because it's the right thing. You know, and spirit will connect us all and across the miles, across the years, across the dimensions. You know, we're all connected. And in that way, you know, we have a huge support behind us as well. So don't judge the world by what you see. Judge the world by what, you know, you perceive.
Absolutely. You know, it's so funny that you mentioned her. You know how she got to meet us? You know the story behind that?
No.
Well, here's the story. I did an interview about maybe 5 years ago with a friend of mine. Her name is Dawn Dancing Otter. And so I did an interview with her, and she's a shamanic practitioner too. And somehow these guys heard a radio show that we did. And from that radio show, they connected with her. And through that connection with her, they invited her to go to Serbia. And then she went to Serbia and taught classes there in Serbia. And from Serbia, she laid a foundation. And then I met her via Dawn Dancing Otter. And I just friended her. And I said, hey, you know, we have a common friend. It's okay to be friends. And it's just amazing how the world is connected like that. Just these little fine threads, these little lines. I may never have met her if we had never done With Insights our shows here or anything. And so I find it really interesting how thin those threads are, how thin the veil is, and how connected we are. You know, we're only two to three people separated from the next person in the world. So
right.
I found out that's how we met her. You know, just through a mutual friend of mine.
That is amazing. Yeah, that's an amazing story. Like you said, you know, that one little interview with a little incident, you know, and now we've got a whole, feel like a whole family across over there in Serbia. We could go visit anytime and be welcome, you know.
And they want us to come. She's been inviting us and inviting us to come, and I think we might have to just make a trip out there and just do something with them.
I do, you know, just do it. Just go and I would love it. I would love it. They have those. They have those what they believe are pyramids over there too. Huge pyramids that look like mountains, but you go inside of them and they've got caves. They've got structures. They've got layers of stone that's been built, you know, up and down. And it's, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's a theory that they're actually ancient pyramids over there too. So they have a whole spiritual awakening going on over there as well. You know, it's amazing.
That's pretty cool. I wasn't aware of that. I do kind of vaguely remember that. They're all covered in grass and vegetation. You can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Somebody else told me that here in Ohio, Dwight told me he thought that some of these mountain ranges that look like peaks, like these little foothills, some of them look like pyramids. He had mentioned to me. And I remember we were going to Portsmouth to go see the Mothman. And
yeah.
I made a point to kind of look around to see if I could notice anything, to see if I could see it. You know, some of them, you know, makes you wonder, you know, what's under there? What's really under there? You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they don't exactly look natural. You know, they look a little too rounded, too geometric to be natural hills. They may be, but at the same time, you know, it just shows you how much we don't really know about what's around us, you know, so... What's been taken away, for one thing, by, you know, the advance of civilization. We used to have 10,000 mounds around in Ohio, and now we've got maybe 10 or 12 or, you know, less than 50, you know, anyway. So all those mounds were destroyed to make way for progress, and they were excavated and cataloged, and, you know, and then just now they're history. And, you know, so maybe our society one day will be like that to another that comes along, you know, and they'll just find the remains of our cities and, you know, excavate them and take them away and build their own on top of them. You know, they could be playing golf on top of the Vatican when these, you know.
I believe that.
Yeah, and that's changed. That's okay. You know, that's the way life goes. It's great because we build our own sacred places now. You know, when we go to some place, it may not be a recognized ceremonial site or sacred spot, but we've begun to form a tradition there, you know. I feel that way about Ash Cave. I feel that way that we brought ceremony and dancing and drumming back to that place. I know that it went on there before. I'm sure it did, along with a lot of other things. But I feel like we have reconsecrated that place as our sacred place. And now, you know, it's other people's sacred place, too, that we don't even maybe even know, you know, that have been there and they carry that forward. And it's there's a reconsecration going on of a lot of these sacred places, so it's just part of the new wave that's coming across the world of spiritual awakening and reclaiming the old ways and also creating the new ways, because the old ways are really just ways that people thought about doing things and they became traditions. So we are planting new traditions. We're planting new seeds of the future with what we do, and it's exciting.
Yeah. You know where we haven't been in a while since they cut those trees down is Shrum Mound.
You're right. You know, and I think it's because the emotion that goes along with that, you know, but that doesn't mean that the mound is certainly less sacred. It probably needs us even more now, you know, just to go there and to continue what we've done, you know, and to show it in the spirit there that we are still connected, that we love our mound still, you know, it's changing. It's changed just like we changed, you know. The trees that were there sheltered us, and they were comforting, and they were part of the mound experience that we had. But there's new experiences to be had too. And I think if what you're saying, I'm getting the gist of it, is we need to visit there again soon.
Yeah, I guess that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
I just totally felt like I felt kind of disconnected from her. You know, from the mound. The other day I drove by and I was like, I wanted to stop by. And it felt lonely. It felt like, it just felt like somebody else moved in there and took the space. That's kind of how it felt.
Right.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Really weird. Because I used to go there all the time. I used to hang out there and just, if I needed a place to meditate, just find myself and, you know, just relax. I haven't been able to do that there anymore like I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me sad.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. And that's really, you know, I mean, that's kind of our judgment of the mound too, you know, is that, you know, we don't want to go there because it saddens us. But at the same time, you know, what if your friend had, you know, a disease or something, or needed some cheering up, you know, and you just didn't want to go there because it made you sad to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, you still need to go there to cheer up your friend and to find a connection again. So, yeah, I'm for that. I'm for going back. Holding ceremony again.
I agree. I think we need to get back there. I miss good old Shrum Mound. She looks different now, but hey, you know, that's okay.
Well, you know, she got a haircut.
Yeah, a bit, literally. But there was some cool design, you know, so, stumps, though, you know, if you remember that.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that. Yeah, you know, when they cut the trees down, as much of a shock that it was, you know, when I was there blessing the stumps of the trees, you know, tears were falling from my eyes. But in those stumps were designs. They were like black, almost like, I don't want to say tattoos, but they were like, yeah, some kind of totem designs. And it's very, very interesting what was inside those trees. I feel like it was spirit in those trees kind of coming through and showing, you know, itself in designs and patterns that we still have to understand, you know, that was trying to communicate in some way to us the pain, the joy, the things that went on there, just its own life. And, yeah, it was fascinating.
Yeah. There was some of them look like warriors, and some of them look kind of like animals. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
Right. Maybe it was like a final gift of the trees to us to present us with those designs to ponder for years to come and to enjoy. You know.
I want to see if those designs are still there. Do you think they're still there?
I think they're there, but they're probably faded quite a bit. You know, they're probably not as fresh. You can probably still see them faintly in the stumps, but we'll go there. We'll visit. We'll take pictures. We'll share our experiences there, and an old ceremony. I think we need to go there and let ourselves reconnect more. And because that's our local mound, you know. There's other mounds in town, but that's the one we've done so much work at and had so much experience with. You know, just shortly before that, we had our memorial for our friend Deb, who passed on.
Yeah, that blows my mind. The trees were taken. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, that's right. We had a memorial there, and who knew that those trees were going to be sacrificed like that?
Yeah, it's, you know, I understand. You know, I do understand. I was outraged at first, you know, and I'm still upset by it, but I understand why, you know, when it was explained to me that, you know, the trees could blow over and expose human remains inside and, you know, be like disturbing a tomb, you know. I understand that, but nobody really knows how the ancestors wanted those mounds to be presented. You know, they may have welcomed the trees there, or they may have kept all the grass off too. It may have just been dirt, you know, I don't know. We make our own judgments on that and how we feel they would have wanted it to be presented, but truly we don't know. They left no record of how they did that or what they did. You know, so more or less, you know, it's up to us now to determine how we would like those mounds to be presented. And there are mounds now, you know, because we are the ancestors. We are the descendants of those ancestors. They dispersed into the population, and their blood is in our blood now, too. And so we have to treat those mounds as we would like to see them treated and presented. It's you know, instead of preserving them like they're in a museum, they're living, they're alive, and they need to be celebrated and connected with.
And, you know, but for me, some of those trees weren't on the mound, you know, and that's what kind of bothered me a little bit. The ones I can understand, but the ones that were, like, on the ground, you know, it was just kind of, like, at the base.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it just wanted to make it kind of look like it used to be. I don't know, David.
Yeah, we're starting to sound like old men. Like, hey, you remember when it used to be like this, and oh, now it's like this.
I like the old way. I like my coffee with black.
Yeah.
But yeah, either way, it's what it is. Like they say, right? It is what it is.
Right. It is is what it is.
We must adjust, kind of like my kids. We must adjust. We must move forward and bend like the tree with the strongest wind across our face, but not break.
That is true. That is true. You know, we found an incredible tree on our creek walk. Speaking of trees, that huge tree that it took four of us to put our arms around. I mean, that was a grandmother tree right there.
Yeah, that was huge. That was four of us, and it was almost the whole tree diameter of our arms, you know, together, right? Like when we were all holding hands, just a little bit smaller maybe, but
right.
That was pretty amazing.
And those are the things. We never would have seen those that if we had stuck to the trail. You know, we never would have had that experience. So, you know, I'm glad that we let ourselves be led by spirit rather than by our own intentions, you know.
I totally had a great time, man. It was just amazing. I was just having fun.
Running. I could tell you were kind of a little kid again, just wandering along and exploring things. I found a frog, you know, and
I was like, bye. Enchanting. If you can't keep up, not my fault. See ya. Y'all want to be talking back there in the back.
Yeah. I was stopping to take pictures and just to appreciate what was going on, too. So, we all moved along at our own pace. We caught up with one another. We, we hung out, and then we moved on. It was exploration. It was like being there for the first time, almost. Like, you know, maybe you've, the first people would go down there and walk it, you know, even though we knew we weren't, of course. But it had that kind of feel to it, you know, exploring, not knowing what's around the next bend. But, you know, having your eyes open, your mind blown by what was going on, you know, around you at the same time. So,
yeah. I know one thing. I'd never been in that creek before. That's the first time I've been down there.
Really?
So for me, it was a new experience for me. Yeah, I was just like, this is fun. I was just amazed by all the different, those big iron balls and all the shell and you know, the slate and stuff that, you know, would break off from the shell base. It just was beautiful.
Yeah, and then we came to a series of waterfalls, little tiny waterfalls that kind of went down.
Yeah.
Then that was really
right.
Cool. And then the river turned into sort of like a gray clay, you know, kind of a gray color. It had been this stone, kind of dark brown, black kind of, you know, stone. And then it turned into this clay. Like, it was very, very beautiful, interesting, you know, change that it went through at that point. You could tell you were getting down, you know, millions of years in this rock there. And you could look up the side of the cliffs and see the layers, you know, and think about how many eons it took for those stones to form from just, there's a song that said, one of the lyrics of the song says, you know, that solid stone is just sand and water in a million years gone by, you know, and you think about that like, wow, you know, there's such timelessness around us, you know, that there's things that have been here for millions of years, and here we are. We have our human lifetime of 100 years if we're lucky, you know, and then we're gone, you know. And we think we're just fleeting by here,
right.
You know. So we make our mark, however we do, you know. It's just our living here is what we leave behind.
Pretty cool. Let's take a 16-second break, and we'll be right back.
There you go.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network, your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
We are back, and let's open up the phone lines a little bit and see what our listeners, if they have anything to share. I think we have a good listener here who's a good friend of ours, and hopefully he can tell us about what's going on in his life.
Okay.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, good evening. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, sir? What's going on?
Oh, just starting to get things together and packing up and getting ready for the weekend.
Getting ready to go to the Big GC, right?
Big GC.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So things have been hectic, and of course everything always stacks up right before you try to do something important. You know how that goes.
Tell me about it.
That's right.
Hey. So what's going on, Brian? What would you like to share with us tonight? Is there anything on your mind?
Well, there's always things on my mind. I think on multiple dimensions simultaneously. You should know that by now. That's why I talk to myself so much.
For the sake of the show, our listeners.
Sake of the show. Well, you know, one thing that we're always talking about is, you know, why aren't we able to get this done? Why aren't we able to get more public support for these things that seem so obvious that need to be done? And I think we have to, sometimes some of us are a little too hip for the room, as my musician friends used to say. And we aren't speaking the same language as the mass of people we need to reach. And so we have to sometimes speak in terms not necessarily of some alternate state of shamanic existence, but downright basic ethics in a way that most people can understand. Okay. And I think this is, you know, so much of what we do, really, in Native American culture, everybody's always fascinated by the mystical elements of it, or what something that appears to be out of the ordinary, but so much of it is ordinary. It's just very focused. And so much of it really has to do with ethics and principles of conduct. And I think when we go back to that, we can find a common ground with people who may not always follow what we're talking about when we say, oh, well, we went off and did a group drumming in Ash Cave. Okay, mm-hmm. So some of us understand that, and some of us get into that. And yeah, I've been a drum maker for many years, and so I love that idea. But for a lot of people, they'll go, that's nice, you beat some drums, so what? And we have to, we have to get back to saying, okay, well, here's the connection. It's like if you ever were into Sherlock Holmes mysteries, Sherlock will say something where he just says something that just seems ridiculously prophetic or supernatural. And then he takes you back through the chain of connection. This observation led to this observation, led to this. And when you see the entire sequence, you go, oh, yes, almost anybody could do that if they just had their eyes open and knew what they were looking at. Well, that's the way I think that a lot of Native medicine really is. It has to do with, I mean, I think back to so much of what the elders in Oklahoma taught me and so much of what the elders in North Carolina taught me. Mm-hmm. And actually, increasingly, I've been going back to things that my own family taught me back before we spoke of these things openly, because as you probably know, we didn't really speak of these things openly until about 1978 when the laws changed.
That's true. That's correct.
Yeah. And, you know, I was digging through all the stuff that I'm trying to get together for the weekend. I found two little pieces of buckskin about maybe the size of my hand. And I'm looking at these, I'm going, and then I realized what they were. They're the two pieces of the first medicine bundle I received when I was 18.
Wow, nice.
And I received my first medicine bundle and my first pipe when I was 18. I since found out that was tradition. I didn't know it was tradition because nobody talked about these things. This is just something my family did, but my family was weird. I spoke to one Native elder historian, and I said, you know, when I was a child, my father made a bow and arrow for me. And he said, when you were five. And I said, yes, how did you know that? And he said, well, that's the tradition. It wasn't just your father trying to get you into deer hunting. That was tradition. He was passing it down to you, probably in fragments, because he probably didn't receive the entire tradition either. But these little things add up, and we sometimes have to go back to, we're always going back to the basics. We always think, you know, we are ascended masters of some type, and we don't need to go back to the basics. We're all working on our doctoral programs now. We don't need to remember, go back to the alphabet, learning the alphabet and learning basic grammar. But, in fact, we always need to go back to that. And so we're, you know, I'm looking through these things. I'm just going, okay, now I have a situation where I am the caretaker, the custodian of some important, historically important pipes. And all of that goes back to receiving my first pipe at age 18. But I had lost that sequence of connection. Okay. All right? So sometimes we have to go back to these. We have to go back to instructions we were given long ago by people who we thought were just, you know, our parents, who we never really think they know that much. You know, there's this period between when we're between about age 11 and about age 22. During that period, our parents don't know anything. We're kind of embarrassed. We are looking for a DNA test to prove that we were somebody else's parents' children, you know, because no, I don't want to even believe that I'm from these people. Let me be from somebody else, and maybe they have a brain between them, right?
Right.
And you've raised teenagers. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Icky. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, in about when they hit about 24, 25, they'll go back. My dad was like one of the coolest people. He was the most tuned in person I knew. He was involved with all kinds of Indian stuff back before it was popular. Right now, they don't care. You know, except how old's Dante?
He's 25. Starting to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's coming out the other end now, right? So he's starting to go, hey, Dad.
Rare, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So these are the things where we sometimes think we don't need to go back to basics, and in fact, we always need to go back to basics. I'm thinking of, like I say, little things, and because of the doctoral work I've been doing recently, I was drawing on so much of that, things that I was taught by the elders in Oklahoma, and just very simple, straightforward things. You know, we used to say that when you, people would say, how do you tell the difference between a real elder and somebody who's read a few too many books and is really pretending? It's really very simple. It's the real elder doesn't try to sound like an authority on everything. They just give you something that sounds like very common sense, granny wisdom kind of thing. And that when they say it, you go, well, yeah, that's obvious. And they go, well, then why aren't you doing it? And the person who's read a few too many books is trying to connect everything to Kabbalah or Saint Germain or, you know, whatever the latest fad is this week. And one thing that we understand, especially with the pipe, is the pipe is about many things, but part of it is about changing your basic nature. The what you put into the pipe is transformed permanently through fire.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, we are transformed permanently through the fire of the things we go through. We just can't always see it because we have already changed.
Mm-hmm.
We come through the other side of the change, and all of our means of perception have changed as well. So we don't always perceive how different a person we are. And you have to be, because you cannot change the world. You cannot change systems. You cannot change all of these things that we get upset about in social justice issues. We really cannot change a lot of that, but we can change ourselves. We always have that ability, and we have to. We have to change ourselves, because that changes the way we interact, both with the material world and with the spiritual world. So one thing that happens with pipe is it's one of those basic functions. It's breathing. It's about breathing. And I've done illustrations where I show somebody underwater with a breathing tube, you know, it's sticking it out of the surface of the water so that their head's underwater, but they can still breathe. And to some degree, that's how the pipe is. The pipe is like sticking that breathing tube into the spirit world. And we are breathing with the ancestors. We are breathing with the spirits. And those ancestors, that medicine enters our body. And what enters into our body, we know that chemically what enters in through our nasal passages is in the brain in 7 seconds.
That's
true. It passes through that blood-brain barrier. It's in the brain. That's why we use certain medicines we use in that form. It's alkalized by the fire, and then it goes straight in and goes in through the nasal passages. We do that rather than injecting. And the result with ingesting something as opposed to smoking it is very, very different. And part of it is about that. It gets by whatever we take in that way, bypasses all of our immune system. So we have to be very careful about what it is.
Wow.
If you take something in orally, you ingest something orally, all of your digestive enzymes work upon it for days, and some will neutralize, and it comes into the body, into the bloodstream very slowly, and your body has plenty of time to kick out a lot of toxins. What we take in through the nasal passages, through smoking, you don't have that safety measure anymore. So that's why we tell people when they're getting into certain things, like the Itsipi ceremony, you're going to be taking in things, right, through your nose. Well, it better be the right stuff. So just in the same way that Itsipi is about making a sacrifice of water and a sacrifice of oil, the pipe ceremony is about making a sacrifice of breath. And it's literally as basic as breathing. And we kind of sometimes overlook that it's something that's only done special occasions, special ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get back in our particular path. We have to get back to our stone bundle ceremonies on at least a daily basis, if not two or three times a day, because that's one of the things that keeps us on the path. We go back into things. You know, I'm very active with the language.
Yes.
I'm very active with the, especially the Cherokee language.
Why don't you introduce yourself, or we can introduce you too.
Why don't you do it?
Yeah, this is Brian.
If you do it, it'll usually be much more flattering than if I do it.
This is our good friend, Brian Bear Standing Wilkes. He is the chief of the Sacred Pipe Society of the Nemenha, good friend of ours, and he's sharing with us some really super important stuff. I hope you guys are writing this down or go back to the archives, but I just love when you share your stuff. Keep going. Continue.
Well, I mean, I can give you just a little example. You gave, part of my name in English there. But the word that's used in Sahepton, the last portion of it is Atkekt. And Atkekt is sometimes translated as standing on a mountain or rolling down from the mountain. But it also means on the mountaintop, seeking to go up even higher. There are many words in native languages that have simultaneous multiple meanings.
Yes.
And it's not that it means one or the other. It means all of them simultaneously. So, for example, the name of Chief Joseph in Sahepton is usually translated as thunder rolling down from the mountaintop. And that's legitimate, but it also means thunder on the mountaintop seeking to go even higher. And this is one reason that the entire complex of religion practices that came down from Joseph and through his cousin Smahola in Washington State, that's sometimes just called, for shorthand, it's called the Atkekt religion. Okay? And so that is why, because in Atkekt, you stand on the mountaintop, you stand on the high place, which is Tuhul. You stand on the Tuhul, and you are reaching up higher into heaven to receive more that you can then go down to the mountain and down from the mountain and share.
Right.
So all of that is covered in little two-syllable word. So, you know, in Cherokee we have the same kind of thing going on where you have it's Cherokee is really more of a modular code where each syllable has a separate meaning and they get strung together, and the sequence of those syllables can change the meaning of the word completely. So it's one of those things that we tend to forget, that languages that have been around for a long time have a lot of history and a lot of teaching within them. Now, today, in our Western society, people will accept that for something that seems distant and different, like Hebrew, let's say. People who are involved in Hebrew, and they get into breaking down the words because the words are both phonetics and numerals. And they have many levels of meaning depending on the sequence. And we know that entire area is referred to as Kabbalah or Gematria. Same thing is in Arabic, which comes out of similar roots. But we tend to forget that all of our languages did that at one time. And in Native America, many of our languages still do.
Wow.
Yeah.
A fountain of information.
You know,
I love you.
That's right. You know, and it's very important. The words we speak are vibration, and the and they have meaning beyond what we commonly give them. You know, and they basically they, as the Bible says, you know, the power of life and death is in the tongue. So,
yes,
speaking properly is very important, and speaking someone's sacred name is very important to say it just the right way, because if you say it a different way or pronounce it differently, takes an entirely different meaning. It's not that person anymore.
Yes, and that can be taken as an insult.
Yes.
Yeah.
It could cost you your life in some situations, I imagine.
Yes, very much.
Happen.
Very much.
Wow.
Honest mistakes, and you know, many many things have happened. Let me give you another little story out of Cherokee history. The person we now refer to as a chief, at one time that was more of a priest-king. It was a hereditary position. They came down from many, many generations of people who held that position. It was very important. And what they did was the priest-king had a speaker, somebody who would speak for him in public, especially in ceremony. And the reason was, it was considered that the power, the medicine in the words of this chief were so powerful, because that person could only speak the truth and had been trained from childhood to speak only the absolute truth, that if the chief misspoke, that would, whatever had been misspoken would be brought into existence simply by the fact of who spoke it. And so for that reason, somebody who was a very close aide, who knew the chief's mind, would be the one who would speak for him in public. That's how seriously people took their word. And
right.
The importance of being scrupulously honest. And no attempt to deceive, no attempt to dissemble. And this is something
right.
that we, in a lot of our ceremonies, we have this to this day. When we speak of Yunipi, we're speaking of the P is a structure, either a physical structure or an organizational structure, but the Yun refers to breath, and it refers to an act of sharing breath. And we share breath in several ways, one of which is by speaking. And so when we are together and we have what sometimes is called, for lack of a better translation, a talking circle, This is what we're doing. This is ceremony, and what is said has to be scrupulously honest or else it's pointless. You may as well just sit around, have a BS session, and play some poker.
Right, yeah.
But if you do have it and you're doing it right, It's an amazingly powerful tool for change for everyone there, even if they don't say anything. And I'm sure we've all had that experience. So we have to get back to... One thing that's been very hard for me, I spent a lot of time in the news media, and I spent a lot of time in greater New York, Metro New York, where the native language is sarcasm, punctuated with obscenity. And it's one of those things that's been very hard for me to lose. If somebody says something somewhat snotty to you, you come back with about 5 or 6 better insults, you know. Starting with your mama so fat, you know. But whatever. It's like you don't let somebody have the last word and best you on something. Well, that's not the medicine path. The medicine path is the exact opposite. And one thing you can generally find is the difference between the medicine path and the rest of everyday life is it's usually the exact opposite of what you initially want to do. And it's hard, especially with social media. Somebody says something stupid, we really want to tell them how stupid they are. And I've in the last couple of years, I've completely changed the way I deal with social media after a few things where, unfortunately, we don't have a good little emoticon that means I'm saying this sarcastically. And people have taken certain things I said as absolutely literal.
Right.
There have been consequences. So, it's one of those things that, and then I go back to the idea, well, if this ceremonial chief, which in Cherokee is called an uku, if an uku had said this, would they have said it? Or would they have not said it that way because it was anticipated that anything they said would come into being? And, that's a high standard. That's a high standard. We don't always make it to that standard, but, nothing stops us from at least trying or being aware of that standard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, being more aware of what comes out of our mouths, because what comes out of our mouths is what comes out of our hearts. And
yes.
It's an indication of where we are as a human being, and listening to other people's speech and hearing beyond the words and beyond what we want to interpret them to be and hearing what really that person is saying on another level. As you're saying about words meaning more than just their literal translations, the
yes.
way people speak about themselves or they speak about the world around them, is a strong indicator of where their heart is. And that gives us insight into, the healing work that might need to be done for them as well.
Exactly. And it really... when you're dealing with a group and you have to listen, the purpose, in fact, I don't like the term talking circle because it suggests that the main purpose of it is talking. But if you have 10 people in a circle, you're doing 1 unit of talking and 9 units of listening. So maybe it should be, we should use the term listening circle a little bit more.
That might
there
be
we
good.
Go.
That's why we have the talking feather to pass around too, because that keeps the order and, gives that person then the floor, as you will, as you say, to speak their mind and not be interrupted or over-talked, and then they pass the feather on after they're done and so on around the circle until everyone has had a chance to speak their words that they need to speak.
Yeah, and in the old days, that was about a 4-foot staff that was
used.
Yeah,
I like the staff.
And that is still used in a lot of the Native American church circles. That is... still used. It's called by different names depending on what tribe you're from, but it's something that makes it very clear this is the person who has the floor. Everybody else zip it.
Uh-huh.
And listen respectfully.
Right.
Listen respectfully and not just waiting for your turn to jump in, but actually listen and digest what's being said.
Yes, and we all our modern world could learn a lot from that. Indeed, because it seems to be always about how am I going to impress the person when I speak, instead of hearing what's being said.
Uh-huh. That's it. That's so much of it. Yeah. And other than that, I've been very, very grateful in recent months for something I'm involved in called the Cherokee Bible Project, where
yes.
we are bringing the New Testament has been available in Cherokee since about 1860. Portions of it back to about 1827, but the Old Testament is not. And we have finished redigitizing and doing the New Testament books in a way that makes them available to anybody who wants them. We do a trilingual format where it's in the Cherokee syllabary, and then in the phonetic Cherokee, and then in English. So verse-by-verse breakdown. And so that's been received well, but we're working now on the Old Testament. And one thing we're finding is the language is dying much faster than we thought. And out of, 250,000 registered enrolled Cherokees, there aren't more than 30 people who can speak at that level anymore.
Wow.
And many of them are yeah. in ministry. And many of them are, several of them are assisting us. And it's so gratifying when we hear one of them say, "You got it right. you got this part right. Oh, wonderful." But awesome. More importantly, it's great when we hear them say that, had an incident where somebody, when we got the New Testament done as a single volume, one of the people who's on the team, actually the director of the team, bought one to give to her aunt, who was very old at the time. And she gave it to her aunt, and the aunt opened the book, which is entirely in Cherokee syllabary, and she picked a page, and she started reading it out loud. Up until that point, the director was not aware that her aunt understood Cherokee, and much less
wow.
likely that she actually could read it,
because read and speak it, yeah.
all of that went underground for so long. And we got that out, and then about just within a year after that, she passed. But she, mm-hmm. and she said something. She said, "I used to have one of these in Cherokee, but I lost it in a house fire decades ago. This is the only time I've seen one since." So it was like, you know, there's no reason these things should not be in people's hands. I'm one, as you know, Iggy, who's very much the kind of thing who said, you know, I understand why we kept things secret at a time when everything was being suppressed. And
right.
so we could keep it secret who actually knew these things, who had this knowledge, so that they couldn't be brutalized. But now it's just keeping secrets has just become too much of a habit, and as a result, we're losing too much because nobody knows who to ask, nobody knows who has access to the information,
right?
And so the stuff is just dying with them because they aren't being asked, so they don't think anybody's interested,
right?
So do you think keeping it as a secret, not necessarily maybe keep it as a secret, maybe try to keep it in a tradition and pass it along. I know I've mentioned in the past about, you know, so many things get lost and, you know, it just goes by the wayside because no one talks about it.
Yeah.
But, so, I don't know. You know, there,
okay.
it's a fine line. It's a fine line because some things are.
But now the outside world calls and I have to go coop some chickens.
Oh, chicken time.
Well,
you take care.
All right, brother.
I believe we've reached the end of our show anyway, but thank you, brother.
Take care.
It's wonderful to talk to you.
Great seeing you. Bye.
Bye.
That's
wow.
Brian Wilkes. He's chief of the Pipe, Sacred Pipe Society of the Nemenha. He's just the fountain of information. And he and I,
yes.
we just share a lot of talk sometimes. And hopefully I can make it to the Great Council this weekend because that's the kind of people I'm going to be around. And, you know, when you're there, when you're around those kind of people who just have just all that information, it just, and they want to share it too.
Right. Yeah, it's an amazing traditions that are there. And as Brian was saying, you know, it's there was a time to keep things secret, but now there's a hunger for these things. There's a they want to be celebrated. You know, we want to show the rest of the world that it's still alive and growing and a lot, you know, in us. And so I'm really glad that he's doing the work he's doing. You know, he's meticulous and open to sharing, and he's an expert in languages and traditions and cultures and true treasure, you know, as you were saying. So very, very happy and proud to call him a friend and a brother.
Absolutely. Yeah, he and I had this discussion about, you know, things being lost and, you know, because there's a fine line. You know, some people take it and, you know, they take the information and how they use it and how they claim it. It's changed a lot. I remember when Klaffpaller would tell me stories about him trying to learn different traditions. He'd go to different tribes to learn things, and they didn't have medicine men. Not at all. Zero. I mean, the traditions got lost and buried so much that, you know, it got to a point where it was really sad. So,
yeah.
Through the Nemenha, is, you know, we're trying to a resurgence and bring him back in old ways of learning through different inner tribal, you know, groups working together to form a church, an inner tribal church, you know, of indigenous people. And that's what we do. That's what we're part of. So if you want to know about more
right.
about us, you can visit nemenha.org. And it's a really good organization. It's a good church. It's a good system. And it's served me. I would have to say it served you as well too, David, pretty good to express our own spirituality, especially in a country like the United States where, you know, we do have freedom of religion and a place to voice
Definitely.
Our religion and not impose it on somebody else.
Definitely. You know, and so many traditions and tribes are very closed about what they share. You know, they don't want outsiders coming in, who they consider outsiders anyway, and stealing their traditions, you know, or compromising the integrity of their traditions, you know. But here we have an organization that is open and celebrating and doesn't dictate anyone's belief systems, but allows all of us to connect with spirit in our own way under the umbrella, so to speak, of the Nemenha. And we all grow from it, you know. We bring new things in, we discover old things and celebrate those too, and combine to, like you say, form a new people, a new incarnation of the ancient ones who did walk this earth and did their healing work. You know, we're bringing that back into the modern age. So,
yeah,
it's a very, very good.
And now we are the new ancestors. Now we're the ones carrying our traditions into the new world, into, you know, things that will be passed down through our children, through all the different avenues and stuff. Can't be lost. We just can't lose it anymore. And,
sure.
you know, it's kind of, there's been a lot of holistic type modalities that have been lost through time just because of secrecy. And I have nothing against secrecy. I mean, some things are meant to be taught in a certain way and taught properly. Kind of like what Brian started in the beginning of his talk was about how people read from a book and then they try to be experts. And, you know, it's about living and enjoying and just flowing with it and being part of it, being one with it and just loving it.
Right. Yeah. And that's what life's all about. That's what our life's all about, anyway.
Yeah. And I guess our time's
about I think we've reached the end of our show. Yep.
Yeah. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and it's been a while. And I want to thank you, David, for riding along on the ride with me and sharing our thoughts. And then it was cool to have Brian on. That was awesome. So you just never
know
who's going to
show. You never know. That's right.
All right, brother. Well, I'm going to say ho'oponopono, and everybody have a good evening. And we'll see you tomorrow on Lunchtime Wisdom with Mark Matheny. I'll be on with him. I'll be calling into the show, Mark. So if you're listening, you'll be running the dash, the switchboard, because I'm taking my dad to the dentist. So I'm calling in from the dentist's office. All right. And we are out.
All right.
Peace out.
Thank you. Yeah, namaste, peace. Aho.